Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by liberal Rick Perlstein, conservative Lee Newcomb, and Chicago State University professor Philip Beverly. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at beautiful west side of Chicago, the Sirius XM Studios, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. We're going to talk about a variety of things in the next couple of hours, including the buildup of troops in Afghanistan. What's the latest with Iran and some of the new revelations about their nuclear program? A little bit later in the broadcast, we're going to be talking about the possibility of the Olympics coming to the United States and to the city of Chicago. And also, we're going to lead off by talking about one of the big stories of this past week, and that is a rather successful week for the FBI. There were several terrorist arrests, most notably in Springfield, Illinois, where a homegrown Islamic terrorist, he had converted to Islam, wanted to blow up the Paul Finley Federal Building in the state capital of Illinois. Then on the same day, there was an arrest in Dallas, Texas, where somebody wanted a young Jordanian national wanted to blow up some skyscrapers in downtown Dallas. This comes in the wake of other arrests recently in Denver and a couple of weeks ago in New York City. So the FBI appears to be on some sort of a roll, and it thrusts back into the discussion the issue of the war on terror and whether or not we are safe in the United States. And when you hear a story like this, how do you react? And so that is topic number one of our broadcast tonight. Philip Beverly joins us from Chicago State. Philip, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Bruce.
When you hear stories like this, again, there was a big play, obviously, when you had this big story in Dallas, and then you had the big story in Springfield, which is the state capital from where we do this broadcast in Illinois. What was your reaction, and do you become nervous when you hear these stories?
No, actually, I think the FBI has had a pretty good learning curve since 2001. September 11th, obviously, and is probably doing a really good job. What we're seeing, I think, is only the tip of the iceberg of their efforts, that the real effort comes in what we're not seeing them do and what kind of successes they're having that aren't sort of making the headlines, if you will.
Our liberal tonight is Rick Perlstein, one of the country's leading political writers. Nice to have you with us. Best-selling author. We'll talk about that as the program unfolds. What's your reaction?
Well, I think it's fantastic to learn that the FBI seems to be the more effective terrorism fighter than the Marines. I mean, we're going to be talking about Afghanistan later. And, you know, I remember when John Kerry in 2004 mentioned that a big part of terrorism fighting is a law enforcement function. And, of course, he was, you know, run up the flagpole for that. And it was seen as the most, you know, un-American thing he could possibly say. But he really does seem to be vindicated. The FBI seems to be doing good work. I mean, hopefully, you know, they're not entrapping people, and hopefully they're getting evidence that can be used in a court of law. But one thing they do seem to be doing very well is if there are terrorists out there who are planning plots, clearly they think the guy on their left or their right might be an FBI agent. And that sort of paranoia does not make for good plotting.
Lee Newcomb is our conservative tonight from central Illinois, not far from Springfield. Your reaction?
Well, my reaction is I think it shows us once again that Americans need to be vigilant, that we can't pretend that we're safe. We can't pretend that there aren't terrorists among us. In fact, there are significant estimates that say there are significant terrorist cells that are forming in this country. And we can never go back to the kind of attitude that existed in the Clinton administration where we said that it was simply a law enforcement problem, and we had to protect rights, and therefore we had to keep agencies from communicating with one another.
By the way, we should mention tonight in the first hour, we're going to be talking about what's going on in Afghanistan as well. So if you are one who believes that the war on terrorism is two theaters of war, if you will, Afghanistan, perhaps other countries, as well as what is happening domestically, again, this first part of our discussion, I think, will lead to the second. One of the things, again, surprising things about the Springfield case, and by the way, in each of these cases, which is somewhat of a change in their investigative MO, is they're letting a lot of these terrorist plots simmer a while. They initially, in the wake of 9/11, when they learned about it, they nipped them in the bud real quickly. But now they're letting them, move. In fact, in the case of Dallas and Springfield, when the would-be terrorists jumped into the van and made a cell phone call, each of them thought they were going to blow up a building. So is that a good idea, or can you play it a little bit too close and maybe if you miss it by a couple of minutes, there could be some real tragedy, Phil?
I think that it's important to understand how the terror cells work, that there's sort of an operational cell. They're going to be carrying out whatever the mission is. Then there's going to be the support mechanisms around it. And you want to take out as much of that as you can. So you got to let it play out a little bit to not entrap, but get your eyes on who is supporting the people who are actually doing that and see how vast a network or sophisticated a network you may have. Because it's all a sort of puzzle to me.
Homegrown sympathizers, do they worry you a lot, Lee Newcomb?
Yeah, they do. We've now got a couple of generations where we have failed to sufficiently indoctrinate, and I say that in the term of the good term, to teach our children nationalism, to teach them that America is a place of exceptionalism, that is an exceptional country and has been in history. And when you do not teach your children these things and they grow up without a value of nationalism and without the value of identifying with our country and the liberty of our country, then a vacuum will be filled by someone.
But if that happened in the case of Michael Fenton, who is the person charged in the Springfield terrorist plot, if he had gone through that school and had been indoctrinated, as you said, he ended up in an Illinois state prison, which, again, according to the press reports, is where he was recruited. I mean, should we be doing different things because the prisons of America are becoming recruiting grounds and somewhat training grounds for some of the terrorists? Should we be dealing with prisoners in a different way in the wake of 9/11? And I assume that Michael Fenton is not the only one that may be plotting ill against the government.
Well, I mean, our prisons are stuffed to the gills. They're overstuffed. And, I'm not an expert on conditions in prison, but it's certainly the case that plenty of nonviolent drug offenders, people who are, busy with crack cocaine, who get 10 times more sentenced than people with powder cocaine, that our entire incarceration regime, that's one of the ways we've kind of kept the economy running along, is probably not the best way to sustain a healthy society. I'm not going to let this guy off the hook. Obviously, he deserves to go to jail, and, I don't know the details about that. But, when you have a society that puts more people in prison than any other, there are consequences.
I want to talk about that, 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, also, we're going to expand the discussion to profiling. Again, it's a controversial subject. We'll talk about that and also about what is going on in the prisons, not only of Illinois, but around the country that perhaps are creating and growing seeds of anti-government activity. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly from Chicago.
Money talks, and it sounds just like Jim Cramer.
I'm Cramer. Money talks, and sometimes it shouts when the results speak for themselves.
Investors worldwide follow Jim Cramer's advice on TV, in books, and on websites like TheStreet.com. And whether the market's up, down, or sideways, Jim's always hunting down a bull market. And now you can follow Cramer's portfolio at GetCramer.com.
Okay, here's how it works. Every time I buy or sell, I will email you ahead of time. Did you hear me? Ahead of time! It's like, if you can read, you can read my mind. My portfolio, fueled by my great research, is designed to deliver success. And I'll share it with you at GetCramer.com.
Today, you can sign up for 2 weeks of free access to Cramer's Picks and Portfolio. Just go to GetCramer.com and enter code word BUY. GetCramer.com, free today. Go to GetCramer.com, code word BUY.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and special shout out to those people listening in Dallas, Texas. They may be listening to us on XM Satellite Radio tonight, or on WMAY in Springfield, Illinois, or within the sound of our voice on WLS. If you live in Dallas or Springfield, what is your reaction to the rather significant stories last week that there was someone within your midst that was trying to blow up the federal building in Springfield, Illinois, and also in Dallas, some of the skyscrapers? Philip Beverly, we're going to take calls in just a moment, but Philip Beverly, I wanted to get your thoughts on the issue of the recruitment of Islam. That was through the magic of television. We're changing our background. Islamic terrorists being recruited in the prisons of America. Again, one example was the guy that was arrested, Michael Fenton, last week. But what can we do about that, if anything?
Prisons are fertile, I think, breeding grounds for all sorts of anti-government activity, not just terrorism. But if you think about it, all of the occupants of prisons have been put there by the government. So they're not going to be sort of government-friendly. I'm more worried about the sort of prison gangs that have connections outside of the prison walls that provide money and other forms of support for terrorists, and that sort of partnership between sort of ideologues, politically at least, or religious ideologues, and the infrastructure and destructive capacity that gangs can bring, and prison gangs particularly can bring. And there's not much you can do in prison unless you had everybody on lockdown all the time, and it's not feasible.
Should we, in your view, Lee, should we be interviewing prisoners before they get out? And finding out or trying to find out to what degree they may have been radicalized, and if they have been radicalized in a particular way, should they be monitored in a different way above an average parolee who may have gone in for a drug offense or someone for a white collar crime? I mean, literally, how do we keep track of those that may be going out and become the future terrorists that are breeding in America's prisons?
Well, this is a perfectly appropriate type of profiling. We have a small population that we know there's a very high degree of radicalization of some. It's a perfectly appropriate thing to monitor those people. I think we come to the larger question, however, also of who we are as a culture. And I know I often get on this, is culturally who we are as a people. There was a time when Americans knew who we were and we knew how to handle things like prisons. One of the dichotomies that we have in prisons today is that overwhelmingly the Christian ministries involved in prisons have an extremely successful record of the prisoners that they work with coming out of prison and being successful. And we also have a very strong problem with Muslim extremist imams coming into the prisons and helping to radicalize prisoners. Now, we have taken the stand in this country that you can no longer distinguish between these two religions as Americans, and therefore we allow this to happen. I don't know how we solve that. I really don't.
I don't quite see the situation in prisons the same way. I mean, I think that there are a lot of problems in prisons with white supremacist gangs too, Aryan Nations, that sort of thing.
But those are not the problems we're talking about.
Oh, we just had someone blow up a guard at the Holocaust Museum. I'd say that's precisely the problem we're talking about.
Let me just stick to the issue of when someone is getting out of a prison. Mm-hmm. I think we all agree that the people that are there are not they may have been anti-government or anti their federal prosecutor or their local prosecutor, and that's why they're in prison, and so they've had a grudge for a long time. Now they're coming out. They're about to come out. During the time of their incarceration, they may have been politicized in some way. Either they're extreme Islam and prone to violence, or they're skinheads, or they want to strike out. They hate people, and they're going to strike out. My question before the discussion, or before the House tonight, is: should there be some sort of monitoring, either while they're in prison, or an interview process before they get out? And should those people be watched more closely than someone else that is being released? I realize we're getting into civil liberties issues, but again, what do you think?
Rick? I mean, I'm going to do that crazy thing that pundits never do and say I'm not an expert on the subject. I'd have to read up on it. And, you know, I don't know what goes on. Maybe that happens already.
It's easier to sort of watch or monitor prisoners who are on parole because they're just serving the rest of their sentence outside the prison walls, but they're still subject to, you know, continuous monitoring, if you will. But if they've served their sentence, they're done and they're released back into the world until they do something else that's illegal and they get caught and, you know, go through the cycle.
But here's the
again.
Question. Should they be done? I realize that that's, you know, we have right now in I believe all 50 states, if you are a sex offender, you have to register. You've done the crime, you've paid your time, but when you come out, you go on a list, and that list is on the internet, and people can look up and find out whether their neighbor's a sex offender. So that person has not paid all of their dues. There's a residual dues that they're paying. And what I'm saying is, and again, in this particular case, I am sure that that Michael Fenton is not the only Islamic convert in U.S. prisons who may, if given the opportunity, may want to blow up a federal building or kill a lot of Americans.
You know, in a way, it's kind of what they're doing, because let's remember how the FBI proceeds in a case like this. They monitor the internet. They find people who are talking about going to jihad sites, you know, talking about bombs, and they bring them in. I mean, these people were, I don't know, entrapment is a legal term, and that's illegal, but they definitely, you know, these guys got the cell phones from the FBI agents. So clearly they must have some kind of intelligence going on in prisons, and they're pulling people together.
Let's go to phones. Edward, you're listening to us on our flagship station in Chicago, WLS. You're on the air.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. Well, I think we're overlooking people like Caucasians being trained over there, like in, I heard, in Pakistan, German people dressed in, trained by the Taliban. So they can come in and disguise themselves as regular people, and everybody's concentrating on Middle Eastern people.
But, and what is your point?
Well, I think we're over, as far as your point about racial profiling, I think we're profiling too much on Middle Eastern and not too much on other ethnicities.
Well, I think the profiling that we have talked to the point in this program have been former prisoners, and those would overwhelmingly—
In one case, and a Jordanian national in the other.
Okay, well, in profiling former prisoners, I think we ought to profile whatever we need to profile.
If
prisoners coming out of prison today are not going to be Middle Eastern, they're overwhelmingly going to be black, white, and Hispanic. So if black, white, or Hispanic people have been radicalized in prison, they ought to be monitored. If it's Middle Eastern people who have immigrated to this country, they ought to be monitored. We ought to be monitoring, to me, whoever is a potential terrorist.
Right.
Yet the challenge is to determine what is the indicator of that radicalization. What sort of tool do you use to say, oh, okay, radical, we'll monitor him. Not radical enough, we won't monitor him. And the error is, if you make an error, you could have an Oklahoma City again. You get what I'm saying?
That's true.
It's like either you do it for everybody coming out, which is cost prohibitive, or you think of some other way to do it.
Well, you know, here we get into the thing where I know that my opinion is characterized as somehow prejudiced or racist, which it is not. When you get into populations where you have a high concentration of a certain view, that population, to me,
Let's start with anti-abortion activists.
What about them?
They've proven to be violent.
That is absolutely a lie.
That's absolutely a lie?
That's absolutely a lie.
We just had an abortion doctor murdered in Kansas.
That's correct.
So should we profile everyone who's proven to be associated with Randall Terry?
No, and here's the reason.
Because they're white?
And here's the reason. The reason is that within anti-abortion forces, the overwhelming number of those people are so opposed that they would instantly turn in a person who is violent.
I would say the overwhelming number of American Muslims are so opposed, too. In fact, there was a meeting today on yesterday on Capitol Hill. There were 5,000 Muslims who prayed on Capitol Hill, and they had protesters shouting them down through bullhorns. There's a lot of people who don't think that people who aren't Christian in America are not legitimate citizens.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that among Muslim populations who are polled, a very high percentage accept the violence of jihad. And when you have, even it's only 5%, I agree most Muslims are very decent, good citizens of this country. However, when you get a population of people where you can extrapolate a certain fairly significant percentage will accept violence, then you have a problem within your culture. And anti-abortion people are exactly the opposite.
So what's the percentage?
If you're saying something so explosive and so incendiary and so slanderous against the population, you better cite a poll.
Okay. There are a number of polls that were done in Britain around the time we had the bombings of several years ago.
We're not in Britain.
We're not in Britain, but it is
We assimilate immigrants much better than they do in Europe.
That's correct.
Because we don't talk like you're talking.
That's correct. However, a very high percentage of the Muslims in London accepted the violence. And there is a smaller percentage, but a percentage in this country. And I don't know how we deal with it. I'm just saying something that I believe is a fact, and I don't know how we deal with it in a free country.
How do we deal with it?
Philip Beverly.
How big a percentage?
I don't know, but I know it's there.
Well, that's irresponsible.
Do we have a situation here where maybe both of you are right? The reality is there are believers in Islam who are extremists.
Mm-hmm.
There are believers in Christianity or who are pro-life Christians.
Well, no kind of Christianity I know about.
Just a minute. But they are extreme as well. There are elements of extremism on the far fringes of each. But here's my point.
I disagree with you.
It doesn't take a lot of them to either blow up a federal building in Springfield, Illinois, or Oklahoma City, or kill an abortion doctor in Kansas. I mean, because the numbers are small. I'll let you disagree when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar emergency!
Help! We're in a mess! I'm dying through a tire and crashed into us!
I will get you some help on the line.
In a crash, an OnStar advisor can automatically receive an alert.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have a collision out here on Highway 1 with airbag deployment. I'm going to conference into the vehicle.
Hello.
We were just in a head-on collision.
Are you okay?
No!
My daughter's hurt.
My car won't hurt.
I can't get out and get you where I would, okay? I'm stuck.
Okay. We have troopers and medic on the way out there.
We need a new car.
With automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can share your exact GPS location and critical crash details with first responders, so they're better prepared to help.
Okay, there's police here, thank you. Oh, okay. Well, I hope you and the little one are going to be okay.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 14 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our liberal in studio this evening is Rick Perlstein. He's one of the country's leading political writers. He is author of the immensely successful book, Nixon Land, The Rise of a President and the Fracturing of America. It was one of the most successful or popular books from Amazon last year. And Newsweek magazine said it was the best book about the 1960s.
Well, you know, Bruce, they said since 1983.
Since 1983.
But they didn't put the dot, dot, dot on the cover of the book. They just said best book about the 1960s.
And you also do some writing for Newsweek.
I do.
But that came after.
That
came after the review. But they liked what you did. You also wrote a book called Before the Storm, basically the story of Barry Goldwater's rise to leadership in the Republican Party. And again, one of the country's leading political writers based here in Chicago. Lee Newcomb also joins us. Lee is a card-carrying conservative. He is the recorder of McLean County. That is in central Illinois, in Bloomington, Normal area. Philip Beverly also joins us. He is a political science professor and has been at Chicago State University for the last 18 years. Let's go back to calls. Let's go to Maryland, listening to us in Sioux Falls, South Dakota on KELO. Go ahead.
Hi. Can I just ask one very quick question? Where are the statistics that you get? I believe it's Mr. Perlstein when you said that there are just as many anti-abortionists in our country who are violent. Where are your statistics? Because you challenged the other guest, and you know you also made some pretty absurd things when you compared the FBI to the Marines, which are two, you know, and oranges, and then you compared the guard at the Holocaust Museum to 911 terrorists. I mean, you're just making all these absurd statements. Where are your statistics?
Well, my worthy adversary didn't have any statistics either, and I don't. But I do know my own experience. When I wrote an article for Newsweek magazine about how Republicans were criticizing Sarah Palin. I received several death threats when Bill O'Reilly put my face on the screen claiming that I had criticized Sarah Palin.
Okay, you know what, though? I've been involved in pro-life activities in my little city here, and I was receiving threats. I know people who have received threats from the other side. You're talking about anecdotal type things, and you're not talking about a movement across our land.
Let's talk about the nine deaths that have happened since Barack Obama has become president by right-wing people.
These are not relevant to what we're talking about. We are talking about a movement across our world to destroy another Western society, and it's the 500-pound gorilla.
Let me actually respond and ratchet it down a little bit.
A quick response, and then I want to ask Marilyn a follow-up. Go ahead.
The thing about being an American is we used to have the confidence and courage in our country that we didn't, kind of wet our pants every time someone said boo halfway around the world. I think that America is going to do just fine. We don't have to worry about these pipsqueak nations. I think one of the things that Ronald Reagan taught us is that we're the greatest nation in the world. And the idea that we are so vulnerable that we're going to sort of fold as a nation, as a civilization, really reminds me of kind of the worst of liberalism in the 60s and 70s.
Now, Marilyn, here's my question to you. Because Rick made the point that America's prisons, many of America's prisons, also have a significant population of skinheads who hate blacks, Jews, and minorities. And my question to you is, when they're getting out of prison, just like the radical Islamist convert who's getting out of prison, because they have been politically radicalized either before they went in or while they're in prison, should they be treated any differently? Should they be monitored in some way, in any aggressive way, because they are likely to be involved in some anti-violent or in some violent activities either against the government or against other individuals? Should they be handled any differently? That's my question to you.
No, I don't. I don't think they should be handled any differently. I think anyone who is a threat to the peace and safety of law-abiding citizens should be monitored. So, if someone shows tendencies that they've got the tattoos and the shaved head and the attitude of a white supremacist, then yes, they should be monitoring that and they should profile them. Just like, my son, if he would have been around at the time that Timothy McVeigh did what he did, then he would have every understanding that because he fits that white, prairie mix kind of a person, that he would be profiled, and if he got questioned, if he was anywhere in the vicinity or if he had any kind of acquaintances or any kind of affiliations with those groups, yes, profile them. I think it's just terrible that the hands are tied of our law enforcement, that they are not allowed to profile young converts to Islam, because
we don't know whether their hands are tied or not. Certainly, it isn't something they would readily admit. But I do thank you for that. Let's go to Larry, listening to us in Austin, Texas, on KLBJ. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. This is an interesting discussion you're having here, but doesn't sound like any of you have spent any time inside. I have, and I can tell you that most of the people in there are just the poor downtrodden people who got apprehended and are in there trying to do their time without any trouble. A lot of them are just first-time drug offenders. The very few people that are in there that might be potentially liable to being swayed by these radical Islamic groups or whatever should be very easy to identify by the prison officials why they're in there, because these people are monitored 24 hours a day. I mean, you don't have to check everybody out.
Larry, they're monitored in what way, Larry?
Well, I mean, 24 hours a day you're under supervision. If you're in a cell or whatever, and the prison is filled with snitches, so, if there were snitches out there and there were some guys talking about causing some trouble of a specific nature when they get out, word would get back to the authorities. There's no secrets in there.
Larry, you said you had been in the prison network. What was the occasion by which you were there?
Well, I was a first time drug offender myself. I mean,
when was that? That you
no,
were?
No, this was 20 years ago.
What? Let me ask you this question: When there were arrests like there were last week in Dallas and in Springfield, Illinois, as an American citizen, how do you react when the prospect of terrorism in the United States pops up on the front pages again?
Well, you know, I think that was some good police work there. They got those rascals out of the way, but. If you ever go down to the Mexico border and try to go across, either way, it's a real easy thing to do. A lot of these Islamic people look a lot like the Mexicans. All they would have to do would be to wear a serape. They could just walk right across the border. I mean, it's real easy for them to get over here. I mean, that's where we should be putting some of our attention. And then, you know, I could go on and say that these ridiculous wars over in Afghanistan or whatever is just causing these people to hate us. You know, why are we there? I mean, what's the point of it?
Well, let me follow up and ask you that, because one of the questions that the president of the United States has to deal with, you know, in his campaign for president, when he was arguing against the war in Iraq, he said over and over again, and many of his supporters believed what he said when he said that really that the real central location in the war on terrorism was Afghanistan. That's where our focus should be. He is now the president of the United States. He's looked at the intelligence reports. His major advisors, military advisors, are now suggesting, according to published reports, that he's going to ask for anywhere from 10,000 to 40,000 more troops that have to go into Afghanistan, because Afghanistan, we must not fail in Afghanistan.
The Russians tried it. You can't win a war in Afghanistan, a ground war. You could win maybe a predator war or an atomic war, but to have ground troops over there is only for one purpose, and that's to keep our military in shape.
Well, that's...
Which is a good idea, you know.
I want to get, Rick's, your response to that.
It's very interesting answering this Afghanistan question as a historian. I mean, if I agree with our friend from Austin. I think if Barack Obama wants to know about the prospects in Afghanistan, he should give Mikhail Gorbachev a call. And if, you know, Mr. Gorbachev is not available, he could call Genghis Khan. I mean, we're talking about the graveyard of empires here. And, of course, generals are going to ask for more troops. That's what they always do. It looks like Ms. McChrystal, if you look at Spencer Ackerman's reporting in the Washington Independent, leaked this to the Washington Post to try and box in Obama and try and kind of pressure him politically to add more troops.
But Obama himself,
yes,
during the campaign, you
I
know,
think that was
because,
a mistake.
Because you were for John Edwards. We should mention that historically.
Yeah, he turned out to be a real stinker.
Yes, he's a bad guy. He's a real bad guy.
I wish I had been.
Maya Culpa.
Well, you know, I mean, I really believe that one thing that's, you know, we don't have to go off onto the tangent, but what's happening in the healthcare debate shows that, you know, a more adversarial role towards vested interests would have been more useful.
But again, what Obama said, and I want to go back to you, because you were for Hillary Clinton in the primary, Philip Beverly. So I want to – you were not?
Never for Hillary. Never.
But you were not for Barack Obama.
Wasn't for Barack until it was just the two of them.
Well, here's my point. A major point of his whole campaign was Afghanistan. We've got to go where the bad guys came from. All right. Now he is in a position. He can't campaign anymore. He's got to do something.
And
you want to know what's going on? Now, Rick may say the generals always ask for more troops, so he's asking for more troops. Is he going to get them, and should he get them?
He's going to get them. He should get them. And the irony is it may not make a bit of difference on the ground, given the circumstance of Afghanistan. And I think a lot of our examination and interpretation of what's going on there is colored by our negative experience in Iraq since 2003. Had we stayed the course in Afghanistan starting right after 9/11, we probably wouldn't be in as deep a morass as we are now.
But it's his watch now. I want to get your response to that same question, 1-800-723-8029. My question to you as we head to the next segment: should the president get 40,000 more troops for Afghanistan? Yes or no? That's a decision he's going to be making, according to Bob Gates, in the next several weeks. 1-800-723-8289.
The best age for your child to learn to read is during the first 5 years of life. Kathleen discovered this fact firsthand.
A friend of ours recommended the Your Baby Can Read series when we had our first child, Jacob. Never thought anything of it. We plopped him down in front of it.
Your Baby Can Read worked amazingly well.
When Jacob was 3 years old, he was reading at second grade level. He turned 5 in July, went to kindergarten, and in 3 weeks he was moved to first grade.
Kathleen knows it's no coincidence.
Because we have 3 children and all are reading on a high level. School is very easy. Straight A students, maybe 1 or 2 children, but all 3, probably a successful video. So bam, it worked.
Did Kathleen have to work at it?
No, I didn't have to do a thing. Your Baby Can Read definitely gives them a life skill that can never be taken away from them. It's been invaluable.
For a limited time, you can receive a completely risk-free trial of the Your Baby Can Read program. Call now and we'll also include 3 free learning gifts with your risk-free trial. Call 1-800-508-3105. 800-508-3105. 800-508-3105.
From Nashville, Tennessee to Boston, Massachusetts, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway. We have been talking, or we're in the early stages of discussion, the report from General Stanley McChrystal. He, of course, is the key advisor to the president as it relates to what's happening in Afghanistan and Iraq. And this is what he said. This is was part of the leaked information that came out. He said, the situation is serious. Failure to gain the initiative and reverse insurgent momentum in the near future, in the next 12 months, while Afghan security capacity matures, risks an outcome where defeating the insurgency is no longer possible. While the situation is serious, success is still achievable. And this is, according to the White House, there's going to be for the next couple of weeks. And this Bob Gates, the Secretary of Defense, was on a number of the shows today suggesting that in the next several weeks there are going to be many, many meetings and that the president will be listening intently to those in the military. General or Admiral Mullen agrees with this. It appears that many other generals agree with this assessment.
Was that a General Westmoreland quote you just read?
No, that was a Stanley McChrystal report. But your point is, your point is the generals are always going to ask for more.
Right.
My question to you is, don't they know more than the critics?
Well,
I mean, if it was a military operation, because
right.
What is also being reported is that the Vice President Joe Biden is suggesting he wants drones.
Right.
He wants to be winning this war at 30,000 feet. If you're killing people from 30,000
right.
feet, I don't know how that's if you're arguing the moral point. I don't know why that's more moral.
Yeah,
then you also have allegedly the Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, who basically is saying, hey, we don't want to get stuck in this with more troops. He doesn't want to lose control of Congress again. He's already done that.
It's not just the military problem, as was Vietnam, as was every counterinsurgency war. It's also a battle for hearts and minds. It's also a political problem. I mean, the ultimate end game here
they understand that.
Right. And the problem is, in a counterinsurgency war, an insurgency like the Taliban is a nationalistic force. They recruit because of the presence of foreign troops, of foreign invaders. So a way a general sees things in terms of military operations, it has its place. But we need – the reason why our Constitution has civilian control is there are also political considerations.
There's something that's missed in dealing with the Taliban. One of the reasons that they're really successful is that they deliver on the ground. About a year ago, they had opened up a number of schools in Taliban-controlled areas and were educating hundreds of thousands of children. I'll use educating loosely given that it's the Taliban, but that they're able to sort of deliver services on the ground, that's a hard thing to sort of defeat. So a military strategy to deal with the military side of the Taliban is obviously important, but we better be in the business of nation building as well and countering what it is that they deliver to the citizens in that country.
Bruce, I view the kind of thing that Rick said a few minutes ago as the kind of thing that an ideologue says, because he made a statement about, it's our presence there that caused him to be able to recruit.
Obama.
Well, hang on a second. I started this day, Bruce, you called me this morning and told me what we're going to be talking about. So mm-hmm. I spent some time this afternoon looking at it, and I got to tell you, I didn't have much of a developed opinion on Afghanistan. I tend to be the kind of person politically that supports us being there, and I believe we need to beat the the extremists and win the war and terror and all that. But he didn't know much about Afghanistan, and my opinion was sort of, if this is like the Russian thing, I want to get our guys out. But after I spent the day reading, and particularly there's a report that's a 45-page report on the American Enterprise Institute website, AEI.org, on the need for additional troops, that I think is extremely persuasive, because it isn't like Mr. Perlstein said about because we're there, they recruit. That's, in fact, not what's happening. We're spread very thin in Afghanistan. The government is very fragile, and we are faced right now with a decision. And the decision is we're either going to walk out and allow that government to fall, or we're going to stay there and continue to fight a deteriorating situation where we have not nearly enough troops to be able to train the indigenous troops on how to handle their country, or we're going to increase our success by increasing our troops. I'm not the expert in that. I'm reading the experts, and that's what they're saying, and I think they're very persuasive on the potential success. This is not an ideological thing between me, a conservative, you, a liberal, or me, a Republican, you, a Democrat. This is something that
the
president we have now is making a decision for all of us, and I'm hoping that that decision is based on the information of his military experts who know the situation, not some kind of pundit like you and me sitting at a microphone.
Well, the American Enterprise Institute is made up of pundits too, and it's also an extremely ideological organization. Lee, have you ever heard of the American Enterprise Institute saying we needed less troops in the country?
That's not the point.
They're ideological.
Fine, but when you read
when you're reading
people, you always think they bring their prejudices to what they write. You do.
Sure.
So when I read you, I'm going to read the fact that I know you've got prejudices. That doesn't mean your writing is bad. That doesn't mean you're inaccurate. It just means I know you come in with your prejudices.
Well, the American Enterprise Institute has a very bad record. They were the people who gave us the war in Iraq.
Well, I don't care about the American Enterprise Institute. I care about the report I read, which I think is very persuasive.
I want to get back to almost the Johnny one-note recitation by Barack Obama for 7 or 8 months marching towards the White House, in which he said Afghanistan is the central focal point in the war against terrorism. So when your generals come to you after you are president and after you're now privy to all kinds of intelligence operations and or intelligence reports that you weren't privy to at all when you were running for president, now you've got all the information in front of you. It seems to me that he has been boxed in because maybe some of this information was leaked by the generals. But it seems to me he's trapped into a situation where I don't know how you say no to the generals unless you follow the advice of your vice president. And I'm not so sure that that's going to make the political left any happier if they're bombing people from 30,000 feet. Philip Beverly, 30 seconds to you. Then we got to go.
The technology impact never wins wars. You need boots on the ground. And it's a tough pill to swallow. It's not going to be pleasant for us. In the end, I don't know that we win, but we're going to have to do it.
Philip Beverly and Rick Perlstein and Lee Newcomb have been with us in hour number one. They will all be back in hour number two. We're going to continue this discussion. We have a full board of lights at 1-800-723-8029. In the next hour, we're also going to be expanding the discussion, talking about what's happening in Iran, and also talking about the Olympics coming to the United States. Back shortly.
Is your computer running slowly? Thinking about buying a new one? Don't waste your money. Your computer could be infected with spyware, malware, viruses, registry errors, spam, and pop-ups. You don't need to buy a new computer. Just go to DoubleMySpeed.com and find out what's slowing your computer down.
Double My Speed totally cleaned up my system and increased my speed.
DoubleMySpeed.com increased the speed of my computer from the very first day.
My computer was on its last leg. Now it's like new again.
Get your free diagnosis at DoubleMySpeed.com and keep your computer running fast. Your free diagnosis at DoubleMySpeed.com is easy and fast.
It's the best you could ask for. Outstanding, and my computer is running faster than ever.
Find out what is slowing down your computer with a free diagnosis at DoubleMySpeed.com. Don't waste your time with your slow computer. Get your free diagnosis now at DoubleMySpeed.com. That's DoubleMySpeed.com.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Okay, with us today is that stack of money with the giant googly eyes. The money you could be saving with Geico. Tell me, it's really easy to get you. You just go to Geico.com, right? Let's try two blinks for yes and one for no. Wait, did you just blink twice or once? because I blinked and I missed it. I keep blinking.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.
Introducing Ally Bank's 9-month no-penalty CD with a great interest rate of 1.85% APY. Just to make that perfectly clear, that's a no-penalty CD. No penalty for early withdrawal, medium or late withdrawal, no extra fees, forfeiture, and no fine print anywhere. Just a high-interest 9-month no-penalty CD that lets you move your money anytime, anywhere. It doesn't get any more straightforward than that. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally. Straightforward. Member FDIC.
These are tough economic times, so I want you to think about something. Gold. And Goldline is the company you can trust for your gold needs. They've been in business since 1960, so call them today. 877-361-COIN. That's 877-361-COIN. They've been audited from a Big Four accounting firm. Their financials are solid. So call them today for a free investor's kit. 877-361-COIN. You get the free DVD and free shipping on your first order at 877-361-COIN. 361 coin. And remember, goldline.com.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. Tonight featuring commentary by liberal Rick Perlstein, conservative Lee Newcomb, and Chicago State University professor Philip Beverly, and a little bit later on, we'll hear from Olympic historian Bill Mallon. Our program tonight coming to you from the SiriusXM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, and phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. In the first hour, we were talking about the war on terrorism, some of the FBI arrests last week, which stopped terrorist attacks in the United States, and also extending that discussion to talk about the war on terrorism as it relates to Afghanistan. You will remember President Obama, when he was a candidate for president, said repeatedly that Afghanistan was the central point in the war on terror. He criticized the Bush administration for taking its eye off the ball and heading into Iraq. But he focused on Afghanistan. And now, as the president of the United States, with all kinds of intelligence information accessible to him, he has his leading generals, including General Stanley McChrystal, with a report that came out last week. And for the next several weeks, according to Bob Gates, the Secretary of Defense, the Obama administration is going to be looking at all of this information, talking to the generals, talking to those, and having a debate within the Obama White House as to whether or not there is going to be an increase in troops. According to published reports, the general has called for anywhere from 10 to 40,000 more troops to be sent to Afghanistan to secure the peace and to fight the insurgency in that country. And by the way, this is something that George Will reminded everybody today on this week with George Stephanopoulos. A week after next, I believe it is the 9th or the 6th of October, it will mark the 9th year of the war in Afghanistan, one of the longest wars in U.S. history. So the Russians were bogged down there for 13 years. We've been there for 9 years, and yet the president has said this is where you've got to take the battle to them in Afghanistan. Of course, this comes in the wake of recent elections that were rife with corruption and questions of illegality insofar as the election of President Karzai. And then you have the ongoing stories of just rampant corruption in Afghanistan. So once again, we find ourselves in a situation, helping a country and a government that appears to be corrupt. But again, if the fear is that if we are not there, then the Taliban will return and solidify its power in that country and become a staging area for future terrorist attacks against the United States. That's what we've been talking about. Let's go to Jim in South Elgin, listening to us on WSBT. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Enjoyed the show very much.
Thank you.
Different opinions are very educational, left or right.
Well, that's why we've been doing this idea for 29 years, and we're going to keep doing it until we get right. I don't believe that the airways belong to any political philosophy, and that's why we try to present a fair and balanced show long before that phrase was made popular by somebody else.
Okay, which leads me to my question.
All right.
www.dod.gov. Department of Defense website, military presence in 137 different countries. I refer back to what George Washington said. Two keys to a strong America. Number one, keep strong American borders. And number two, stay out of other countries' wars and squabbles. Why, in God's name, well, I know war is very profitable, the contractors, publicintegrity.org and what have you. I know some people want war to break out in every country in the world. But why would we have a necessity for 100 military presence, DOD.gov, in 137 different countries and still call ourselves the peacemakers?
All right, let's let Philip Beverly from Chicago State University and also a former captain in the U.S. Air Force offer his assessment.
Part of our presence overseas is to provide training and support, not be involved in combat operations. We may have a U.S. Army aid detachment, for example, in some small country providing, you know, some sort of military assistance to that country. Is that a presence? Yeah, technically it is. But it's not like we're occupying other countries or involved in combat operations, except in a very limited way. So I think we need to have a presence, and maybe not as big as it is now.
Let me ask you this question, because we were discussing it at the end of the last hour. And Rick made a point that, you know, the generals are always going to ask for more troops. But if you are the president of the United States and you're trying to gather all of the information, it's certainly something that you should be looking at. But in your view, Rick, who else should he be listening to? Because again, he's going to be listening to Rahm Emanuel, who looks at things through a political prism. He's thinking about what is the best thing to get you reelected, or so we don't lose control of Congress. Who are the other people that should be at that table vying for the president's mind on this?
I love that question. I have an answer. The historians, of course. I mean, we make the same mistakes over and over and over again. And I brought up the experience of Vietnam before, and that doesn't mean that everything is going on now that is the same as Vietnam. But there are lessons to be learned. And one of the lessons to be learned is that it's very hard to stabilize an unstable country. Another one of the lessons is that escalations tend to run away with you. John F. Kennedy said, he was very good at telling the generals where to go. He said, the problem with bringing in more troops is that it's like taking a drink. The effect wears off, and you need a bigger drink next time. And, the kind of wisdom of history that, all presidents should be paying attention to.
I think maybe we ought to be looking at the wisdom of recent history. George Washington and the Vietnam War don't have a lot to do with the world today. However, we can look at the situation in Iraq from just a couple of years ago and know that the surge in troops there massively turned around a negative situation, was incredibly successful, and I think there is no more partisan debate about the success of that surge and the benefit that it gave us. And so if we look at a recent very similar situation and how successful that was, then your argument would have to be that the current situation argues for the same thing.
Let's go to Michael in Knoxville, Tennessee on WNOX. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
My question is, it's not really a question and a comment. In Afghanistan, it's not exactly a war that you can fight on the ground, which I
think we lost. Hello? I think we lost him. Let's go to Larry in London, Kentucky, also on WNOX. Go ahead. Larry, we're going to put you on hold because we're going to a break, but we'll come back to you in a moment. 1-800-723-8289. We do have callers on the line. We will continue with them. And also, I want to talk about Iran up to its dirty little secrets coming forward now. We're going to talk about Iran and Mr. Ahmadinejad in the next 45 minutes of this broadcast. And your calls coming up in just seconds at 1-800-723-8289.
Money talks, and it sounds just like Jim Cramer.
I'm Cramer. Money talks, and sometimes it shouts when the results speak for themselves.
Investors worldwide follow Jim Cramer's advice on TV, in books, and on websites like TheStreet.com. And whether the market's up, down, or sideways, Jim's always hunting down a bull market. And now you can follow Cramer's portfolio at GetCramer.com.
Okay, here's how it works. Every time I buy or sell, I will email you ahead of time. Did you hear me? Ahead of time! It's like, if you can read, you can read my mind. My portfolio, fueled by my great research, is designed to deliver success. And I'll share it with you at GetCramer.com.
Today, you can sign up for 2 weeks of free access to Cramer's Picks and Portfolio. Just go to GetCramer.com and enter code word BUY. GetCramer.com. Free today. Go to GetCramer.com. Code word BUY.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go back to calls. Cheryl in Evanston, Illinois on WLS Coast to Coast. You're on the air.
Good evening. Okay, now the Taliban is much stronger in Afghanistan. So if you send in more troops, that'll mean more troops are going to be slaughtered from this stronger Taliban. What about precise aerial bombing? This is 2009. Can't they just do it where they don't have to massacre our
Well, this voice? this is something that was that's been recommended by Vice President Joe Biden and Philip Beverly, who has some experience in the U.S. Air Force in some of these matters, is going to give you his response.
Okay.
I think we become a little bit too enamored of use of technology. We're facing an enemy that does not have or use the same technology that we have, and so we have to meet them where they're at. Yeah, we have technological advantages, unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, that we can see the battlefield and the battle space 24/7. We can do that. But
okay, I'm not suggesting nuclear weapons, but it worked for President Truman. He stopped a war that way with a stronger bomb.
Well, this is not the same kind of situation nor war at all. The thing that many people don't realize that the U.S. military does incredibly well, and Philip, you might have a word in this, is our ability to go in and our military forces train the local indigenous people to run their local governments and to run their local military. A lot of this surge is aimed at helping local governments to develop in Afghanistan. We do that extraordinarily well, and when we do that, we leave a much stronger local government. So it isn't that we're just going in trying to bomb the hell out of people. It's that we go in to do various things, to militarily to protect the local people, and in a very large section, to protect local government officials.
I want to move on to another trouble spot, and that is Iran. Obviously, yesterday they tested another missile. They're flexing their muscles in the wake of an appearance at the United Nations last week, being chastised not only by President Obama, but by much of the rest of the world. Robert Gates, the Secretary of Defense, said today that it is an illicit nuclear facility. The president has said that it's an example of something that really cannot be tolerated. So my question to you, Rick Perlstein, you know that you've been on this program talking about Iran for a number of years now. How far should we let Iran go?
Well, I've been reading up on this. I can't say I'm an expert, but from what I understand from the sources I consulted, they're not any further because of this facility than before they had this facility. And there's a very interesting kind of diplomatic chess game going on. Of course, we knew about this facility. We didn't tell anyone we knew. And then when Iran got ready to announce it, we preempted their announcement. Therefore, you know,
we knew about it in the Bush administration.
Yes. And one of the things that's going on is Iran and Ahmadinejad, you know, making these bad faith arguments that they just want peaceful nuclear power, that they're just in it to, you know, serve their own needs. They are losing, apparently, the moral high ground in the international community. So the kind of room to maneuver they would need in order to build up their program actually apparently suffered a defeat this week.
Well, the president said that the secret underground testing is inconsistent with peaceful purposes.
Yes.
And if you saw on CNN today, they showed the satellite photos of how much that particular site has grown significantly near the city of Kwan.
Apparently, this was learned during the Bush administration after the election. So it's too late at that point for his administration to do anything. It's President Obama's issue. He's the one that's going to deal with it.
Dick Cheney said that this was one of the things that he wanted to strike, you know, when mm-hmm. the Bush administration was still, you know, in power, and you know, because of the change in the election mm-hmm. coming
and
up, they didn't do that.
And a growing issue that we're going to have to deal with is the fact that Israel is the one that is not sitting with the luxury of being on the other side of the world that we are. Israel's sitting, what, 5-10 minutes away from a launch and complete annihilation of the Israeli state. They are the ones that now, without our backing, as they would have had in the Bush administration, may have to do this on their own to take
us
out.
Yes, but if Iran launched a nuclear weapon at Israel, they wouldn't be in Iran, you know, to 5 minutes later.
And there wouldn't be an Israel, and that's what a lot of us are concerned
about. Well, that's why we need to take it out.
Gates has said also –
But if we can't take it out because
severe,
of this is an underground –
That's right. You're right. I mean, the other reality is this appears to be so entrenched that it is not something that can be easily taken out.
And if they have one secret facility, how do we know they don't have 10 secret facilities? The idea that we can somehow use bombs to kind of wish this problem away is a fantasy that
but
he
talked
has.
About Philip Everly, he talked about, we're talking about Bob Gates again, he talked about severe economic sanctions. Realistically, what else can the world do? And again, the United Nations, you know, the big players were getting together. They even got some early buy-in by China and Russia. But what type of sanctions can the leaders of the world really – how much can they really turn the screws on Iran? What can they do to them?
They can't turn the screws at all. Sanctions never work. The history of sanctions show that military action is always going to be needed. Sort of force is going to be needed.
But you know, even with China – China and Russia were to buy into it.
I've got to say, I think it's a bit disingenuous to believe that China and Russia are going to buy into cooperating with the United States.
You know,
I don't believe it's in their interest.
There's something we're missing here. And we're missing what happened in Obama's speech this week before the UN. Did you know that 1 million people turned out in the streets last week in Tehran? Over a million people. Not a word from the Obama administration encouraging the internal Iranian opposition. That's what we need. Pardon?
Then it would be 2 million.
And that would be great because that's what we need. You know, we talk about military options on our part or Israel's part. Why are we not encouraging the people in Iran to overthrow this government? And the Obama administration is not. President Obama said nothing before the United Nations about this. He left it to Benjamin Netanyahu to be the statesman last week.
But let me just say this. How do we know that quietly that encouragement is not going on? I mean, one of the suggestions was in the electoral debate that followed Ahmadinejad's certainly questionable reelection. It was stated at that particular time that the last thing or the worst thing the United States could have done would be weigh in at that point mm-hmm. because then they would look like whoever would take over, they would look like U.S. puppets. So just because the president has not publicly uttered support, that doesn't mean that we don't have people, you know, on the ground there that are encouraging this. But it also appears to be something that maybe doesn't need a great deal of encouragement. Currently, there's 40% unemployment in Iran. That shouldn't. If we had 40% unemployment in the United States, I don't think there would have to be too much encouragement for people to get riled up.
Yeah, but you know, we've got things this week like Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's aligned somewhat with President Obama, virtually almost saying that we need to be part of backing the Iranian Air Force against the Israelis if the Israelis attack. That's the kind of stuff that tends to squelch opposition. We need a president who will speak like Netanyahu did last week, who will speak as a statesman, as Churchill did.
I'm going to make a prediction.
And we don't have it.
If that happens, President Obama will not speak out against Israel.
Well, I mean, my prediction would be if President Obama did that, it would be the least statesmanlike act imaginable.
I don't worry about what he will say, Bruce. I worry about what he will do. And well, I worry that he will not support Israel. Well, currently, it worries me. It worries me that he will do nothing and Israel will be hung out on their own when we ought to be backing them.
I don't think that's likely. Philip, do you think the Democratic president for the United States or any president of the United States intends to hang Israel out to dry?
No president of the United States will do that.
Well,
our relationship with them is too tight and too historical.
Then why did he single them out for criticism before the United States and not Hamas?
He singled out both of them.
Let's go to Jim in Huntley, Illinois on WLS.
Excellent show as always.
Thank you.
You know, several things here. It's you have to look at it as a broad picture or maybe one battlefield. The mistake was with the war in Iraq, we went with too little. We should have got with 750,000 ground troops to 1 million. Then we could have pivoted after we annihilated the place in Iraq, put our control there, and then gone into Iran. When the guys are all there, we could have then proceeded forward. If you let Israel attack Iran, or if you let the United States attack Iran in 82 and 83, Iran launched these sea mines that they have there from the Korean World War II vintage, and then that would start to block the sea lanes there at the Straits of Hormuz. Plus, they've got the Exocet missiles that they bought from the Chinese Silkworm missile that's comparable. And then they also have the high-speed torpedoes that they bought from Russia. So using those, they're going to sink 3 or 4 or 5 supertankers plus blow up other ships and then block all oil transfer through the Straits of Hormuz. You need to have at least 1 million ground troops that will go in there and clean the mess out with your air power on top of it.
I think you've got too many mice running around in your head.
You're not going to win.
You have too many mice running around in your head that you're chasing.
Yeah, you can't do that. It won't work.
You can overcomplicate this in your arguments, as you just did. We need to look at this from the geopolitical standpoint for the United States, and we need to look at where we need to be today, not what we should have done 10 years ago. I wish that we had done what you said 10 years ago. We didn't. We are where we are today, and we have to handle it today.
Good. So then where are you going to get the ground troops to go in on the Straits of Hormuz that's 25 miles long and 25 miles across? Are you going to send United States Marines, 100,000 of them strong, Iran to secure the eastern side of the Straits of Hormuz?
You're obviously very self-confident in your arguments, which I do not believe are accurate.
Okay, on that note, we're going to move on. Thanks very much for your call. Our phone number is 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we're switching gears. We're going to talk about the likelihood of the Olympics in 2016 coming to the United States, coming to the city of Chicago. We have one of the world's foremost historians on the history of the Olympics with us for the next couple of segments. Back shortly from Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont.
Introducing the Ally Bank 12-month high-yield CD with such a great annual return of 2% APY, people think there's a catch. But no, no catch, no teaser rate, no limited time offer, no fine print, jargon, or legalese, no hidden tricks, traps, pitfalls, curveballs, or doublespeak. Just a 12-month high-yield CD with a rate that's among the most competitive in the country. Call Ally at 877-247-ALLY or go to allybank.com. Ally, straightforward. Member FDIC.
Wow, whoa, what is this? A trap on our front lawn?
Yeah, it's a trap. I'm going to catch that stack of money with the googly eyes right there, the money I could be saving with Geico.
But it's right there in front of you. Just get it.
Psh, where's the fun in that? Then I wouldn't get to use these 200-pound springs or these laser sensors.
Well, it'd be a lot easier to just call Geico. I mean, it's what normal people do.
Well, then I guess I'm just more adventurous than most.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us around the studio here in Chicago. Our liberal tonight is Rick Perlstein. Our conservative is Lee Newcomb. And our man in the middle is Philip Beverly. He is a professor of political science at Chicago State University, and once upon a time was a captain in the United States Air Force. As I mentioned, in this segment of our broadcast, actually between now and the time we go off, we'll be taking your telephone calls. And one of the questions I want to ask, as most of you know, if you listen to this program, you know we do this program from Chicago. And I can tell you that if you live in Chicago, the dominant local story for quite some time has been the efforts by the city of Chicago to get the 2016 Olympics for the United States. Chicago is competing with Madrid and Tokyo and Rio de Janeiro. Those four cities are vying to be the site of the Summer Olympics in 2016. It is a huge deal here. I would like to know, everyone listening beyond Chicago, is it important that the Olympics come to the United States for you? And also the likelihood, because the decision will be made in Copenhagen next Friday on October 2nd, the International Olympic Committee will get together and make the ultimate selection choice. And joining us now to talk about the Olympics and put not only 2016 in context, but put it in context with the significance of the Olympics economically and politically and culturally, we welcome Bill Mallon. He is co-founder and past president of the International Society of Olympic Historians. He joins us from Durham, North Carolina. And Mr. Mallon, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to refer to you as a doctor because you are a surgeon, and it's nice to have you with us. Let me ask the first question that everyone within the sound of our flagship wants to know, and that is WLS in Chicago, because obviously maybe we are being fed a Pollyanna story about the likelihood of Chicago getting the Olympics. But as you read the tea leaves, how serious is the Chicago or United States bid, and who, in your view, is our major competitor at this moment in time?
This is probably the hardest bid in my memory to call. I don't know. I think if Obama goes to President Obama, that is not Michelle. If President Obama goes to Copenhagen, Chicago has a chance to win. I think if he doesn't, they probably don't have a chance to win. And I suspect it will be Rio de Janeiro if he doesn't go. But I still have this strange feeling about Madrid.
I have said publicly on the air that in reading whether or not the president is going to go and make the personal appearance, which has been, again, a huge story here in Chicago, I have argued that because the president is this world figure whose reputation is way up there on the world stage, that being a politician, he is probably trying to ascertain whether or not Chicago is going to get the necessary votes. And if he learns they're not, then he doesn't want to put his reputation on the line by showing up. Does that analysis make sense to you?
It does. I hadn't thought of it in that way, but I think you're probably right. I'll tell you, if he has a way to figure this one out, he's better than everyone inside the Olympic movement. Dick Pound, the Canadian IOC member, who's very, very well informed, said that he has no idea who's going to win this bid.
In the stories that I have read, it is referred to Rio de Janeiro as a significant player, and maybe that's the one that we are vying with most. And my question to you is, it's always been referred to as the sentimental or the emotional favorite of the IOC. Why would they say that?
Because the Olympic Games have never been held in South America, and that's what Rio de Janeiro is billing itself as primarily. It said, Brazil needs the Olympics. No other city needs the Olympics. We do. And there's some sentiment to finally put the Olympic Games in a South American city.
Do you believe, you also said a few moments ago that you brought up Madrid. is Madrid perhaps a compromise candidate between those who are being torn between Chicago and Rio de Janeiro?
Madrid, of the four bids, Madrid probably has the best chance to finish last. But it has this wild card of Juan Antonio Samaranch, the former president of the IOC before the current president, Jacques Roca. And Samaranch was president for about 22 years, and he's revered in the Olympic movement, and he's Spanish. And there is some, you know, people talking on the inside that the IOC may give it. And Samaranch is also close to 90 and will not be around almost certainly for the 2016 Olympics. And some people are saying the IOC may give the Olympics to Madrid as a favor to Samaranch in return for his service to the Olympic movement over those 20 years or so.
People will remember there was a lot of controversy and corruption that surrounded the Olympics in Utah. My question to you is, what sort of legitimate lobbying and politicking is going on right now, and how does the International Olympic Committee, if they can, how do they guard against any bribing or corruption that might take place during the voting process?
Well, they've changed the bid process more so than just the voting process. It used to be that cities could bring the IOC members to their city and basically offer them all sorts of inducements when they were there to vote for them. And the IOC actually does not allow the IOC members to visit the cities except for a select group of them that form what's called the Evaluation Committee, which evaluates the bid cities for future Olympic Games. So only about 7 to 10 IOC members actually visit these cities, which limits a lot of the inducements and bribes and things like that that can be given. Now, you know, I can't say that they can't get to them, you know, outside the walls of the Copenhagen, you know, convention center or wherever it's being held there. But they've tried to limit it, at least, based on the scandal that occurred in 98 to 99 or so.
Why should anyone listening to the program this evening care if the Olympics come to the United States?
That's a good question. You know, the Olympics are not terribly important in the United States. I'm an American, and I'm sort of, as a sports guy in America, I'm kind of an outsider because I don't do football or baseball, things like that. I got to do the Olympic Games. And but to the rest of the world, the Olympics are terribly, terribly important. And, you know, it's the biggest sporting event in the world, you know, probably except for or even more so than the World Cup in soccer. The international movement wants them in the United States at some times because we provide the bulk of the monies for the Olympic movement via television, and a lot of the sponsors that support the Olympic movement are American. So if the IOC bids looking at economic factors, Chicago probably is the best bid for a number of reasons, more than what I just said. It's also the most economical bid and a few other things. In terms of why the United States should want them or not, it's probably more that we're becoming more of a global economy. You know, the IOC may want to come to Chicago because there's a lot of international corporations in the Midwest and the Chicago area that maybe they can influence to help sponsor the Olympics in the future. But the international corporations in Chicago and the Midwest may also want to see the Olympic Games because all corporations now are becoming more globally oriented as we become a smaller world. It's not just an American world anymore by any means. And this is a chance for them to, you know, showcase the city of Chicago and what they might be able to do for, you know, other places in the world.
Given the way in which the 1972 Olympics were marred by the Black September terrorist movement, and now living in a world where terrorism is more of a concern, and looking ahead that in the next 8 years it's more likely that maybe the threat of terrorism will grow and not subside, is the United States and the Chicago possibility, might that be viewed by the IOC as a detriment because maybe the United States would be viewed as more of a target than maybe some of the other cities?
I don't think so. That has never crossed my mind in thinking about this. You know, Athens in 2004, only 2.5 years after 9/11, was, I think, much worse for that because it's right near the Middle East. It has a huge coastline. I was actually worried when I went to Athens a little bit, you know, that, you know, terrorists could get into the, you know, the coastal cities of Greece anywhere they wanted to, pretty much. But it turned out fine. And I don't know if you've been to an Olympic Games, but security's pretty tight there. Now, obviously, you know, no security's impenetrable. If they want to do something, they can probably. But the security's pretty tight.
The big question that everyone in Chicago asks is, will taxpayers end up paying the bill? And let me sort of broaden the question. What are the most successful Olympics financially, and do they make money, or do they cost money to the sponsoring city and country?
Well, if you've got 3 or 4 hours, I can fully answer that question.
Well, you know what? We're going to break for a commercial right now. I don't have a couple, but I've got 3 minutes for you to maybe fine-tune it a little bit. We're going to break for a spot, and then we're going to come back. We're talking to Dr. Bill Mallon. He is the co-founder and past president of the International Society of Olympic Historians. And again, if you're listening around the country, do you care if we get the Olympics? And if you're listening in Chicago and you have specific questions, we've got one of the best experts in the world on the subject, 1-800-723-8289. More questions and your calls when we come back from Chicago.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If your credit card debt is out of control, if you're in over your head dealing with monthly payments, there is powerful information you need to know about the government's bailout of credit card companies. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe with monthly payments you can afford. Credit card companies have been given billions and need to clean their books once and for all. And that's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with payment plans customized for you. It's yours free by calling 1-800-400-5439. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes and learn how we have saved our clients millions. Live better, debt-free. For free information on how to settle your credit card debt in a government bailout era, call 1-800-400-5439. That's 1-800-400-5439. 1-800-400-5439.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're talking to Dr. Bill Mallon, who is a historian with the International Society of Olympic Historians. And Bill, take us inside the vote. The vote is scheduled for this coming Friday. It is October 2nd in Copenhagen. What is the process? Tell us about the final presentations and how the vote actually takes place.
Well, each city does make a presentation next Friday. They have a certain time limit, and it's actually by they draw cards basically to see who goes in what order. After that, the entire IOC session, it's called, which is the annual meeting of the IOC members, then vote on the cities. And the way they do it, it's a round-by-round voting. The city with the least votes in each round is dropped out. So there's four cities left now, Chicago, Rio de Janeiro, Tokyo, and Madrid. After the first round, one will drop out. After the second round, another will drop out. So there'll be three rounds of voting, most likely. The only exception to that is if any city gets a majority of the vote in the first, second round, they would win the bid at that time. So it's by majority vote, but it almost never happens until it's down to just two cities.
As a longtime watcher of these votes, what will you be looking for on by the way, will you be in the United States or will you be in Copenhagen?
I will be in the United States. I've been to this is at the Olympic Congress. I was at the last one in Paris, but I'm not going this year.
Okay. What will you be looking for? Obviously, it'll probably be available on television. It certainly is going to be available on many of the television stations in Chicago. But what would you be looking for if you were actually observing the process?
Well, actually, you can't observe the process. It's a closed meeting, and they don't actually announce the round-by-round votes until the entire process is done, so it's hard to look for anything. Again, the most important thing to me is, will President Obama be there? If he is, I think Chicago may win it. If he isn't, I really don't think they have a chance.
Let me take a moment. I want to talk with some of our politicians around the table here in Chicago. Philip Beverly, Barack Obama, hometown guy. What is your view about whether or not he will go and the upside and downside of going for him personally?
Given the given the enormity of moving a president on any type of trip, I think to announce that he's going to go can sort of tip our hand, if you will, and maybe give people an impression that it was already decided and he's going just to sort of,
right,
you know, close the deal. I think whether we get it or not, I think he should stay home. Just let the process play out. If Michelle's up for going, she can represent the United States adequately.
Even though there have been, as Bill has just said, even though if he doesn't go, that could be perceived as a snub. I'm using the word snub. Bill didn't. Bill, would you use the word snub?
Yeah, and that's how it'll be perceived. The other three heads of state, Japan's Yukio Hatoyama, Spain's Jose Luis Rodriguez, and Brazil's Luis Inácio da Silva are all going to go. And in 2000, the bid for 2012 that occurred in 2005, the tipping factor for London was thought to be when Tony Blair appeared and supported the London bid.
Lee Newcomb, what's your view? You're a man from central Illinois. There could be some residual help for tourism around the Illinois. Illinois, if we had huge turnout here, which we probably would. What's your view as to whether or not the president could or should go?
My personal view is I hope he doesn't go because I sincerely wish Rio luck. I don't want it here. I don't want the corruption. I don't want the public monies spent. I don't want the billions of dollars that will probably go out of the state and city of Chicago budgets to support this. I don't want it because of all of that corrupt stuff that we all know is going to happen.
So I
wish them luck. Now, I hope he stays home, yeah.
Rick Perlstein. And by the way,
84% of the city of Chicago agrees with me.
Rick Perlstein, who we should mention, lives very close to some of the Olympic facilities in the Hyde Park area. What's your answer to the question? Will the president
go?
With
my dear, dear friend Lee. I mean, I don't know. I'm agnostic on the politics of it. But I'm a Chicagoan. And when 84% of the public agrees on anything, that's a pretty good reason to not to support it. So I guess I'll just say I hope he doesn't go. And you know, I'd love to see Sugarloaf Mountain in 2016.
A question to you, Bill. How common is it that the town or city that ultimately gets the Olympics may not have real strong hometown boosterism for it for some of the reasons that we've just heard articulated by our guests in Chicago?
The only places where you really have people that are against the Olympics are the United States and Canada. Because the Olympics are so important to the rest of the world, the public support right now in Rio de Janeiro is 85%. The public support in Madrid is about 85%. Tokyo's public support is at 55%, and that is being mentioned as incredibly low for a bid city outside of the United States or Canada. Again, you know, the Olympics aren't as important to the United States. We prefer to, focus on the American professional sports. And also, the United States and Canada, you know, we can speak out more freely against these things.
Bill, what's the betting line on this? Do you know what the betting line might be?
Right now, there is a betting line, sort of. There's a code number called the bid index. Right now, Rio is at 61, Chicago is at 60, Madrid's at 58, and Tokyo's at 57. And Chicago just moved up from fourth place, and Tokyo moved down from first place recently. So.
Okay, so in your view, it could be, as you said in the beginning of the interview, Chicago or Rio, you wouldn't be surprised with either, and you wouldn't be surprised with Madrid.
Yeah, that's about right. I don't think Tokyo's got it.
Bill Mallon has been our guest, expert on the Olympics. Our thanks to Lee Newcomb and Philip Beverly and Rick Perlstein for their assistance in joining us this evening, and also Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, we'll all know about the Olympics. I'm Bruce Dumont. Go Chicago! I'm Bruce Dumont.
Money talks, and it sounds just like Jim Cramer.
I'm Cramer. Money talks, and sometimes it shouts when the results speak for themselves.
Investors worldwide follow Jim Cramer's advice on TV, in books, and on websites like thestreet.com. And whether the market's up, down, or sideways, Jim's always hunting down a bull market. And now you can follow Cramer's portfolio at getcramer.com.
Okay, here's how it works. Every time I buy or sell, I will email you ahead of time. Did you hear me? Ahead of time! It's like, if it can read, it can read my mind. My portfolio, fueled by my great research, is designed to deliver success. And I'll share it with you at GetCramer.com.
Today, you can sign up for 2 weeks of free access to Cramer's Picks and Portfolio. Just go to GetCramer.com and enter code word DOW. GetCramer.com. Free today. Go to GetCramer.com. Code word DOW.
A 30-second lecture with DeVry University professor Greg Sellers, Ph.D.
Many people find statistics a little, well, dull. However, here's one that might change that. For more than 30 years, 90% of our graduates in the active job market had careers in their fields within 6 months. You know, maybe statistics aren't that dull after all.
DeVry University, 90 locations and online. Discover education working at devry.edu. Certified to operate by Chev.
These are tough economic times, so I want you to think about something. Gold. And Goldline is the company you can trust for your gold needs. They've been in business since 1960, so call them today. 877-361-COIN. That's 877-361-COIN. They've been audited from a Big Four accounting firm. Their financials are solid. So call them today for a free investor's kit. 877-361-COIN. You get the free DVD and free shipping on your first order at 877-361-COIN. And remember, goldline.com.
I'm Felix. I've been doing tattoos for over 15 years. I get people in here who ask me about removing a tattoo they don't want anymore. I've really had nothing to help. And then I discovered Wrecking Balm. It's an easy daily fading system. The darkest, deepest pigments, they easily fade without any discoloring, blemishing, or scarring the skin. Wrecking Balm is really the best thing for tattoo regret.
Call right now, 1-800-507-4221. For your in-home 60-day risk-free trial, that's 1-800-507-4221. That's 1-800-507-4221.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Okay, with us today is that stack of money with the giant googly eyes. The money you could be saving with Geico. Tell me, it's really easy to get you. You just go to geico.com, right? Let's try two blinks for yes and one for no. Wait, did you just blink twice or once? Because I blinked and I missed it. Ugh, I keep blinking.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.